probably isn't a topic that nettles and annoys more managers than the subject of performance appraisal. There are not just a few reasons, but lots of reasons why managers dislike performance appraisal.
I hate playing God. It puts me in a role of judging the person, and that damages our relationship.
The process of performance evaluation is too formal. Filling out all those silly forms is pretentious and artificial.
The form is no darn good. It's too complicated.
I don't like the timing. They always ask me to do this before we do the salary review. My people don't even listen to what I'm saying. They're listening for only one thing, whether or not they're going to get a raise.
They asked me to review this person's performance for the last year. I can't even remember what happened 2 months ago.
It's too subjective. My version of things like attitude and interpersonal cooperation is going to be very different from somebody else's.
There are just too many confrontations built into doing this performance review.
Performance evaluation, as it is typically practiced in American organizations, just does not work and is not worth the time. It has a negative impact on the workforce, accomplishes virtually nothing, and should be discontinued. Among other things, studies have shown that an average employee's merit rating varies by level of job status, age, and years of service. Middle-aged people in lower grade levels are consistently rated lower than young or old professionals. Constant errors occur across all levels. Some supervisors tend to rate everybody high or everybody low, and some supervisors will rate much higher than other supervisors in the same factory and units doing the same kind of work. These kinds of rating problems are inherent whenever you have a subjective rating system, and that's exactly what performance review is. I further submit that unless a performance review system can generate positive acceptance by the manager group, it is a system that is bound to fail. In addition, there is also a growing body of evidence that many performance evaluation systems are not valid and put organizations at legal risk in the area of equal employment opportunity. I have also learned, though, that managers are not against the concept, only the present approach. They are not against an approach that will accomplish the positive things they're interested in: helping people, getting a handle on what's happening, providing feedback, planning for future work. It's been interesting to me to see that the same managers who speak so negatively about performance review systems are just as quick to suggest new criteria for designing a positive system. Performance appraisal is, of course, applicable to all employees, not only the problem people who are the focus of this program. But an effective system of performance review is particularly critical when you're trying to turn losers into winners. While this program is not designed to provide a complete treatment of the subject of performance appraisal, allow me to get down to brass tacks in terms of what a manager can do. Basically, there are two approaches to performance evaluation that ought to be considered, both of which will satisfy most of the legal requirements and also overcome most of the criticisms that managers express. Those two approaches are self-rating and planned performance. The first of these approaches requires that managers move toward a participative method for performance review. Employees rate their own performance and then review that rating with their boss. The boss, of course, retains veto power and can change the rating to whatever the situation calls for. Participative performance does not mean that the boss surrenders his or her authority, but it does mean that this is a task that can and should be partially delegated to the employee. Now, suppose we gave 100 employees an opportunity to fill out their own performance reviews. What would they do? Some would rate themselves at about the same level that their boss would. Some would tend to rate themselves higher than their boss would. And some would rate themselves lower than their boss would. What percentage of employees do you think would tend to rate themselves at or below the level at which their boss would rate them? Would you believe 90%? This astounding phenomenon of accurate or low-rating behavior was first discovered in college courses where professors sometimes gave students the opportunity to submit their own grade. At first, it was thought that a bunch of high-achieving, aggressive young people would tend to overrate. But in fact, the majority rated themselves at or below the level that the professor would. The same proportion of accurate raters and over or under raters has been found at work, and this general rule makes the whole idea of self-rating worth considering. Now let's look at that further, because nothing is ever absolutely perfect in management, and we're looking for systems that will work for most managers most of the time with most people. What does a supervisor say to somebody who has rated himself or herself lower than the supervisor would? Obviously, such employees are very hard on themselves, very self-critical. I think we all sometimes tend to be more critical of ourselves than we are of others. We know our own failings, our deficiencies, and we're very mindful of these to such an extent that we become almost unable to see our strengths. Managers with employees who rate themselves too low are free to approach those employees.
I'm sorry, Beth, but I have to change your rating. I don't agree with it. I think you're producing far more than you realize. You're more cooperative, and the quality of your work is better than you've given yourself credit for.
And so the manager's role is that of taking this person with a low self-perception and raising that perception. And what's the impact on the employee? The employee thinks the manager walks on water. The manager is a hero, a praiser, an encourager, a raiser-upper. In practice, managers report that dealing this way with employees who have underrated themselves generates a profoundly positive attitude toward the boss and the evaluation, as well as a heightened sense of respect and mutual openness. The boss has a legitimate reason to praise and to increase the rating of this person. In other words, you don't lose with this type of person by raising the rating, and the impact of doing so is far greater than if the manager had completed the form without letting the employee participate. What about an employee who rated himself or herself about where the manager would? How does the manager respond?
Well, John, you seem to have accurate self-knowledge. You obviously are in tune with what's going on, and I want to tell you that I pretty much see the job the way you've outlined it here. I'm going to change a thing or two and add a couple of comments, but I think you're just about on target.
Keep in mind that the employees who rate themselves at the same level as the manager aren't necessarily rating themselves high. They could be rating themselves low or only average. Nonetheless, such employees are showing that they have good self-perception, that they understand where they are. This is important knowledge for their manager to gain regarding them. Managers say that when they're dealing with people who rated themselves accurately, they don't lose by indicating their agreement with these people. Here, the manager's role becomes that of a confirmer, a reinforcer of where such employees are now. And, report managers, that provides an opportunity to chat with them about where do we want to go from here? What now? What next? Notice that the manager wins with both of these groups, with 90% of the people. If you ask managers, are you winning with 90% of your employees using the traditional performance review approach, where you tell them what the ratings are, the answer would be an emphatic no. So even at this point, it is easy to see that the self-rating system seems to be a better performer. Now, what about the 10%? What about those who rate themselves higher than where the manager would have put them? That group breaks down into two parts. About half of the people have rated themselves too high, not because they're trying to play games with the manager, but because they really believe that their performance deserves the rating they've given it. How should a manager respond in this situation?
I'm sorry, Jeff. I don't see it quite that way. There have been some problems and also some milestones that you haven't yet achieved. The way I see your present performance doesn't put you at the level you rated yourself, but I know that you have potential. There's no question in my mind that you're going to achieve that level one day, but right now I have to lower this rating a bit. I don't want you to be discouraged by that, because I'm here to help you to get to that point and even surpass it.
How do employees react to this? Well, sometimes there's a little embarrassment, sometimes there's a little apology, and sometimes there's a subsequent growth opportunity, particularly when the supervisor has presented his or her response kindly. You really don't lose with these people either. At heart, they are good people who aren't there to fight you about the rating. They simply had a different perception, and now they understand how their boss sees it. Finally, we come to the other half of that group, the troubled ones who have also rated themselves too high. Often they have inflated opinions of themselves and will want to use this opportunity to provoke an argument. They are ready to defend their viewpoint versus their manager's viewpoint. Does the manager win with these people? Usually not. Would the manager have won with them if he or she had done the rating first? No, because some folks will never be happy having their performance rated, no matter who does it or under what conditions. Criticisms that managers reported about the present evaluation system. Filling out the forms takes too much time. Note that the manager has now delegated the task of form completion to the employees. Manager time is slashed. Employees, by and large, do not mind filling out the forms themselves, since it's obviously in their best interest. What about managers' distaste for playing God? Do they still have that role under this kind of approach? No, because the dynamics of the situation shift dramatically. A manager, by delegating the task, is basically saying the employee is accountable.
You're responsible for the work, and you're responsible for rating how well the work is coming along. That's just part of the job. And you're the pro. You're the expert. I'm not going to be monitoring you like a little child. I expect you to be an adult and candidly report what's going on.
That approach treats people like grown-ups, and they don't feel as if they're being graded. So the role of the boss changes to that of coach and teacher and counselor. In like fashion, as one goes down the list of objections that managers expressed, one finds that virtually all those objections are either resolved or minimized under the self-review process. Just changing who does the rating eliminates most of the reasons why managers resist. I've seen this process, this changeover within organizations, and I tell you, it is dramatic. Managers who fought performance evaluation now welcome it. By considering self-rating in light of legal concerns, under the old evaluation system, the company and manager had to prove that their rating was valid. Under the new system, the onus shifts to the disgruntled employee. The fact is that far fewer cases have landed in court when employees have such a direct hand in monitoring and evaluating their own performance than when these tasks are done solely by the supervisor. Are some yes buts going through your head? Then allow me to answer some objections and questions. The self-rating idea is such a simple one, and like just about everything else in management, the simpler the idea is, the better it seems to work. However, there are some additional guidelines worth considering. Sometimes, not all employees are comfortable in filling out the form. If so, you might consider continuing to do direct supervisory rating for those people. In other cases, it's been reported that some employees lack adequate reading or writing skills. You might want to consider the idea of letting them think their rating through at home and then come in for a meeting in which you act as the scribe and write down what they tell you. Then you could discuss it with them. Or you might decide to do a supervisory rating on them too. So use the self-assessment concept as a tool, but adapt it to fit your own particular situation. My observation is that once a manager starts accepting the idea that performance review really isn't part of his job, but that performance coaching and development of people are, then the issue of who ought to fill out the form becomes very minor. I believe that if you'll think this through, you'll start to move away from the old, outmoded, and invalid system toward a system that reflects the new American organization and the participative model that gets the results we need. I've seen about 600 different performance review forms. I've never found one that I like in all respects. There's no magic in the form. The real purpose of performance review is for boss and employee to have an opportunity to discuss how things are going and how to make things better. I don't think the paper ever accomplishes that. It's just a record, a place to put down in writing where we think things are at a given moment in time. We need to have such a record, but don't waste a lot of time on forms design. Instead, get on with the job of communication. If certain divisions or certain departments want to use one form and others want to use another form, fine, as long as there's nothing illegal about any of them. One thing I would suggest, though, in the forms design area, is to get rid of any personality-oriented rating words such as initiative, cooperation, enthusiasm, or attitude. If you really want to look foolish, go sit in a courtroom and have some attorney examine your qualifications as a psychologist. Exactly how big, Mr. Johnson, would you say an attitude is? Have you ever seen an attitude? Does it glow in the dark? Is it oblong? I would suggest that performance review ought to be focused primarily on the future. This is where things are now, but here's what we're going to do next. A lot of performance evaluation forms that I have seen pretty much ask you to summarize everything that's happened in the last year. They're backward-looking. Even if we could get an accurate and valid measure of everything that happened in the last year, who cares? What can you possibly change about the past? The only thing we can really do is learn from the past. An ideal performance review form should probably reserve 50% of its content for a discussion of what is going to be done in the areas of development, assigning new jobs, or changing job content, and what will be done to change the accountabilities and authorities that people now have. Isn't the primary objective of management to make things better? So the focus of a performance evaluation should be how managers can help employees in the future. If we spent our time thinking about that, I believe our organizations would be a lot richer and our employees a lot better off. Employees can't change the past. They may have been losers in the past. Their performance may have been dismal in the past. But even after you rate that and prove it, so what? It's still only history, a dead issue. Do you have a bigger market share because of it? Have you got more profit on the bottom line, higher productivity, better team interaction? I doubt it. So let's keep our performance reviews focused on performance, not on personalities. Let's keep them focused on the future, not on the past. Let's keep them oriented toward valid, concrete, relevant issues rather than toward subjective concepts. And let's keep in mind that there's no magic in the form, only in the process of two people trying to work together to create a better future. No doubt about it. Existing performance appraisal systems are almost universally disliked. Managers' reactions to them range from avoidance of the task to outright hostility. They offer a lengthy, specific, and convincing list of reasons to justify their dislike too. On the other hand, managers can also whip off a list of equally convincing reasons why some sort of performance review is necessary. These reasons reveal that the manager's quarrel is not with the performance appraisal concept itself, but rather with the fundamentally useless systems so often found in today's organizations. Some of these systems are worse than useless, actually harming working relationships and putting firms at legal risk. The issues of legality and validity are relevant both to existing performance review systems and to any new system that might be proposed. Basically, to be legal, an evaluation system must not adversely impact any of the growing number of groups protected by law, or if it does, the system must be shown to be valid. That is, its provisions must be legitimately job-related. When considered from the standpoint of legality and validity, to say nothing of managerial acceptance, present performance evaluation systems simply don't measure up. The best alternative is performance evaluation through self-rating. It has been found that a surprising 90% of employees are realistic in their self-assessments or even overly hard on themselves. Of the remaining 10% who rate themselves higher than their managers would have done, about half are honestly mistaken and will accept the manager's constructive reassessment. The other half are the argumentative minority who could be expected to persist in their inflated opinions of themselves regardless of the merits of the evaluation system. Putting the performance evaluation ball in the employee's court in this fashion not only satisfies nearly all the complaints managers express about the present evaluation process, the self-rating system holds up better in court as well. In revitalizing the performance evaluation system, managers must ignore the trivial details of forms design and stop looking at intangible qualities like enthusiasm and personality. They need to concentrate instead on a future-oriented, participative approach that will yield results. In the next segment, we turn our attention to the second major approach to performance review, which I call planned performance. Work planning is a system that goes beyond performance evaluation. It is a management by objective system, but one without a lot of the extra paperwork and dead weight usually associated with poorly designed MBO approaches of the past. It is a very powerful and practical tool for managers, and it's ideally suited for both preventing problem employees and for channeling and controlling employee behavior that has gotten off track. The system relies on two forms, one that sets out the work plan and one that reviews performance and plans for development. You can find examples of each form in the progress guide. Some organizations will use this approach instead of a separate evaluation process. Others will tack on a formal performance evaluation instrument to summarize the quarterly performance plans. As you review the forms, their use will become more apparent. While they are not for everybody, they do work very well for professional, technical, and managerial employees. The first part of the system is work planning and specification. This shows exactly what the job is all about, and it gives employees a quarterly work plan that will clearly specify what they need to accomplish in each period. The employee fills the form out, then reviews it with the manager. Briefly, here are the areas which are covered. Position focus clearly identifies the major objectives of the job. Part of this is key functions or key result areas. There are 7 key result areas, or KRAs, that are relevant to every manager's job and are to a large degree relevant to many professional and technical positions.
Number 1 is customer satisfaction.
The customer is that individual or group of people who are the direct recipients of the services provided by this position. In some cases, this may be an outside paying customer. In other cases, the customer might be other line managers or company personnel. Finding out what the customer needs and satisfying those needs is a key result area.
Number 2 is economic health.
Nearly every job has a measurable financial impact: sales, expense control, or profitability. Every manager has to be concerned about economics.
Number 3 is innovation.
Finding new and better ways to do things is absolutely necessary in an ever-changing, dynamic business environment. It is not uncommon for managers to complain that their employees often don't seem to provide them with ideas or suggestions. Innovation can be clearly stated as a key function and responsibility of the job.
Number 4 is quality.
Quality of product or service is a concern of every position. The market does not want junk. How to maintain or improve quality standards is an essential result area.
Number 5 is productivity.
Maximizing output, given the amount of input resources available, is a key component of most jobs. To improve organizational efficiency or systematize workflow is a key result.
Number 6 is people growth.
Contributing to the growth of our associates and growing ourselves are major results needed for many jobs and are a prime requirement for all supervisory positions.
Number 7 is organization climate.
Improving the feel of the place, the working atmosphere, or the corporate culture is always a must. If the job description or the KRAs listed do not adequately cover the focus of the job, then planned performance will have served its first purpose, helping you think through why this job exists at all. Let's move on to weight. The second column under position focus asks for a percentage weighting for each of the position's major responsibilities. One entry may be worth 10% of the job, another 25%, yet another 40%. In a study done at General Electric, it was found that less than half of the manager-employee pairs could agree on 50% of the job elements. Think of it as 2 overlapping boxes. One box represents how the employee views his job, while the other box stands for the manager's view of that very same job. Where the 2 boxes overlap, the 2 people agree on job activities. But there are areas where the employee thinks he should be doing other things. The supervisor, on the other hand, has his own agenda for additional duties, and these differing expectations, if left unmanaged, lead to blind alleys, the performance of unnecessary work, failure to perform desired work, and ultimately, frustration and conflict between supervisor and employee. The first function of planned performance is to reach agreement on exactly what job the incumbent is to do and how much time and effort or waiting he should be expending in doing it. Problem behaviors often emerge precisely because these things are not spelled out in a non-performance planning situation. As one WAG put it, if you don't know where you're going, you're liable to end up someplace else. Let's move now to the work plan portion of the planning sheet. Here you list the specific projects or tasks and prioritize them in order of importance using an A, B, or C code as spelled out in the worksheet example. You also need to determine whether the employee in question has the authority to perform the job, and this can be handled by establishing authority codes. A is complete authority, B is when the employee should do a task and report back, and C is when the employee should discuss his actions first with you and then do the task. This form also outlines a schedule for the start, review, and completion of a job. Finally, the column labeled Results and Standards of Performance shows how the results will be judged. This may be a quantifiable number or a subjective measure like the manager's opinion. The second part of planned performance is review, redirection, and development. This form is included in the progress guide also, and it is to be completed by the employee at the end of the quarter. The first step in progress review is to rate results from 0 to 2. 0 means no problems, 1 indicates some problem or difficulty in completing the task, and 2 indicates serious problems or difficulty. In this way, the employee grades his own performance and progress. Next, he enters action that needs to be taken, whether it's more work or the solution to the problem. He also outlines how the manager can help him. At this point, the manager gives his rating of the employee's results on the same 0 to 2 scale, a comparison is made, and a discussion results. The manager will also review the proposed action plan and add his or her thoughts. In the section of the form labeled Development Plan, a need must be established first. Here, the areas where action is necessary will be outlined. Development actions include the steps to be taken in order to meet identified needs. Responsibility and scheduling indicates who will do what and when in terms of arranging for the development action to occur. To summarize, the Plan Performance Program is a practical, effective, management by objectives-based approach for organizing, monitoring, and enhancing employee performance. Not only does it help get work done, but it positively controls and channels human performance. The first part of the program utilized the work planning and specification form on which the employee and manager define together what the job consists of. They develop a detailed action plan for carrying out the specified job functions. The second part of the planned performance program utilizes the review, redirection, and development form. Here, the employee and his manager assess the employee's progress toward attainment of the objectives that were outlined in the action plan, and they identify development activities that must be done to upgrade or enhance performance. I want to emphasize that planned performance is a fully participative approach in which the employee accepts the lion's share of responsibility for the execution and the success of the program. The employee is the one who completes both the work planning and specification form and the review, redirection, and development form. Information on these forms is then reviewed jointly by the employee and his manager. In this way, you'll arrive at shared understandings and create action and development plans to which both of you are committed.